ready to talk about the depressed horse for the anti-penultimate time.
Is that the actual term? For
yeah.
Second to second to last.
Yes.
Third to last, I suppose, would be me using my English words. That's fun. Yes, the horse, he does such terrible things.
this season in particular.
Yeah, he does. Yes, I am ready for that. And are you?
I am.
Okay. Well, this could be the intro, to be honest. Welcome back to Untitled BoJack Horseman Project. This is, unsurprisingly, a BoJack Horseman podcast. This is episode 5, season 5. My name is Matt Waters. I'm joined on this horsing around endeavor by Ben Phillips. Ben, how are you?
I'm good. Are you excited for the titular season, technically?
Yeah, like, the reason we called it this is at the end, and, like, not a huge moment, but I remembered it when you suggested the name, so I guess it's valid.
That's what we want from a title to a podcast, is I guess I remembered
it. I guess I remembered it, you know, like, I recognise which one that is. yeah, so this is season 5. It is... I remember it feeling very big. Like, I'm not saying BoJack wasn't, like you've talked about it. Like, you're like, looking up your top 10 lists for TV of each year, and you're talking about, like, how it was growing in buzz. I feel like, while it was slowly bubbling up year on year on year, season 5, it could be my memory playing tricks on me. It felt like a big event.
I think it's just, potentially, in terms of the general trend of TV is kind of descending a little bit. And so what happens is like, you have all these things, like, I think this is around the time when, like, I think, like, Orange is the New Black is winding down. You have the implosion of House of Cards happening at the same time. And so what you've got is like, oh shit, there is still this one really good OG Netflix show,
yeah,
that is continuing.
The last one sort of carrying the flag. So it drops September 14th, 2018. I think they promoted it well in terms of, like, the poster is pretty iconic with the blimp floating above him. And, like, this is a season that delivers a lot of, like, oh shit moments. And, like, you know, we'll get into the ins and outs. Ben will try and recall what happens in each episode. We'll pick our favourites. We'll find out. You know, we'll talk about new characters. We will, of course, get into some tongue twisters. Not as many this season, but some pretty fucking long ones.
There's a really long one that I tried to find.
I've got them both. Like, don't you worry.
No one had, like, written it down online. I was like, I was on the quotes page for the episode, and I was like, no one has written this down.
Well, maybe this is my calling to post all of these. Before we do that, just very briefly to talk about it in a very big picture terms. I think I like it less. I know I like it less than 4.
Yes.
I might like it less than my second favourite, but it was your third favourite, 2. Like, I might slot it around 3 or even 4. And it's not to say there aren't some staggeringly good episodes here. It's not to say there aren't some incredible moments that, like, the early seasons couldn't have, well, they, you know, couldn't have pulled off this eloquently. I just think, as 12 full episodes of a full season of television, I don't think this is as strong as the stuff they've put out before.
See, I think this might be the most cohesive season that they've put out in terms of, like, a top to bottom trajectory for, like,
right,
how it's constructed almost.
And like a season long story.
Yeah, and part of that is because all of the main characters are involved in, like, the same plot, really. Like, yeah. BoJack, Carolyn, Diane, Peanut Butter, Chavez are all in, like, one location for almost the entire season. Like, BoJack is the lead on a TV show. Princess Carolyn is producing it. Diane is a writer on the show. Mr. Peanut Butter is co-starring on the show. Todd is one of the executives at the company.
You've got them all in the same place again. That's the difference, is it has shifted into a... what is the term? Like, it shifted into a full season story at the expense, potentially, of... I mean, I say that. There's obviously... Every time. There are episodes that you can pull out and be like, oh, this episode. But I think it is less... I guess episode for episode, I don't think it competes with some of the early ones. But that's part of a shift of the landscape at the time. Like episodic television is going away around now. And like Netflix has become so big for being bingeable. And like, yeah, this is a season where like, if you think about the totality of BoJack's journey and like where he will end up, where he is almost court-martialed by himself, this has a lot of fucked up shit in it.
Yeah, this is kind of like an integral season, and I agree with you. Like, it's probably harder for me to like remember what happens in individual episodes because everything is revolving around this one thing, and obviously I'll be able to pull out kind of like what happened in Free Churro, or I'll be able to tell you the gimmick of Interior Sub or whatever.
Sure,
but like,
yeah,
could I tell you like the individual ins and outs of like the earlier seasons where it's just
yeah.
Well, then making a TV show.
We will find that out soon. Before we do that, we've talked about what we think about it. I assume our esteemed friends at the Annies back up our feelings on this show.
So this is, I think, their most awarded season.
Of course it is. Of course it's like, you know, a slight down dip and it finally gets its fucking flowers. That's how this shit works.
I mean, I think it's just that general thing with award shows when you go long enough and they'll just kind of go like, oh yeah, this thing that like has been bubbling away and got like fan votes has slowly become like the best thing. Like this thing that's been getting fan attention for years and years and years, we finally reached a point where we will recognize it when most people are kind of like, okay, now it's time to wind this down, which I think BoJack is very clever in realizing is that this does, like, we've been saying in previous episodes that, like, this feels like the state of the relationship that's going to be for the rest of the show, and it feels like they're winding things down. And this really is the winding things down season where, like, this feels like the show needs to wrap up very soon. And obviously they do get to do that in that they are renewed for one final, is it 16 episodes?
Yeah, it dropped in two parts of eight, and you know, I'll say it again at the end, but we will be covering it that way. So we will have episode 6 will be part 1, episode 7 will be part 2.
But yeah, this is the first season where BoJack Horseman wins the Best General Audience Animated Television Broadcast Production.
Finally, what titans did we topple?
So we toppled Big Mouth, the Planned Parenthood show, Bob's Burgers, The Bleakening Parts 1 and 2, Human Kind of... I don't think I've ever heard of that show. Desperately Seeking Social Skills for Facebook Watch. My God.
Sorry, I missed it. Which episode of BoJack got this, sir?
I haven't said that yet. Oh. And then Venture Bros, The Saffrax Protocol, what it beat. The episode from season 5, what episode would you nominate as your episode for like the best thing that BoJack Horseman did in season 5?
Well, I don't want to cannibalize content as we pick, so I'm more going to say if I had to predict what they put forward, I would say the Showstopper.
No, it was The Dog Days Are Over.
Okay. I don't like that episode. you may want to file this under me not liking Pickles Aplenty in terms of controversial things. I just don't think that one fully comes together in the way that they want it to. But we have seen... Alison Brie has been heavily rewarded in this show, perhaps unjustly or, like, you know, weighted more towards her than the rest of the cast. So a huge Diane episode makes sense. I mean, you know, I get it. If you're looking at it, has a very different sort of feel, and it's got lots of like little title cards and different, different looks to show timeline. And
I
stuff
do
like
not
that.
Know what the Annie's deal is, whether or not they like a kind of like a little intricate thing more than they like a big grand statement. But
what I'm hearing is there will be cartoons where we do our top 25 favorite cartoons of each decade, and we look at the Annies as we did There Will Be Movies and the Oscars. No, that's never happening.
And then the other award that BoJack won at the Annies was Will Arnett won for Best Vocal Performance in an Animated TV Show, beating Debbie Derryberry for F is for Family, Juliet Donenfield for Pete the Cat, Patrick Warburton for Skylanders Academy, and Tara Strong for Unikitty.
Please tell me it was for Free Churro, or do they not give an episode?
They don't give an episode of that.
Fuck, what is this show? Fair enough. Well,
I have to assume it's for free churro. You have to
assume. You would assume. He does a 20-minute monologue. Yeah, okay. So the Annie's finally caught up. Better late than never. Again, like, even a season of BoJack where I'm like, I don't know if this is one of the best ones, it's still better than, like, most television. So, yeah, finally they got there. Before we get into new characters, the opening titles have changed once again. You know, we start with just, like, his living room is empty and Philbert is playing on the television. Then we move to the Philbert set, which is just the living room again, but with crew in it, which is part of the joke. Diane's new haircut is incorporated into the opening titles once we see that she's got it. And Gina will appear in the living room for a while, and then she will go away. Yeah, that's going to get real sad. New characters. So the big ones. I would say, like, as a broad overview, I think they reined it in a little bit compared to previous seasons. Like, there are still cameos. Like, you know, they got Whoopi Goldberg and Laura Linney and Issa Rae and Eva Longoria, David Diggs, Brian Tyree Henry, David Sedaris playing fucking Princess Carolyn's mum.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale, like Yolanda's family. Like, it's kind of more this season one episode appearances from a lot of people.
It's kind of like, I don't know, I feel rude to say the smaller names, but they're more like, they're maybe chosen for their ability more than stunt casting.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite of the, like, if I'm discounting, I mean, for me, the big four new characters in terms of, like, season-long arcs, well, and several of them debuted last season, but, you know, Flip McVicar, Rami Malek, Gina, Stephanie Beatrice, Yolanda, Natalie Morales, and Pickles Aplenty, Hong Chow. I'm calling those the four recurring. So of the people who are only here for, like, one episode, do you have a favourite among that group?
I mean, David Sedaris is really fun.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
I went to the credits and I was like, who have they got to voice this? And I was like, I immediately
you
discounted
have to double
David
take, don't you?
Yeah. David Sedaris was immediately discounted. I was like, oh yeah, no, so David Sedaris is voicing another one. Oh, Jamie Presley, is she voicing the sister? Like, oh, no, Jamie Presley is not voicing. No, it's not voicing the mother.
I quite like Brian Tyree Henry playing Cooper Jr., and also the, like, no good boyfriend. David Diggs pretty good in, like, a single episode, but, like, yeah.
I like Louise Yamo and Longoria. Like, they're fun as a sex obsessed thing. I think it's like Issa Rae and Wanda Sykes both carry their episode, but I definitely don't. Then none of these reach the pantheon of, like, all time great guest horsemen.
And I should say we've got, like, Jessica Biel back, and we've got Angela Bassett back, and you know, a lot of one episode people coming back kind of thing. Abby Jacobson as Emily a couple of times, but, like, yeah, it's a little bit more reined in. So of these big four new characters, so Flip. You know, is sort of lampooning gently, kind of. It feels mean to say it's David Fincher, because I think the idea is he's a lot less successful than David Fincher, and they've already had David Pincher. But
I mean, I assume he's taking the piss at Sam Esmail, who's the creator of Mr. Robot. Like that would be my take. And,
yeah.
And obviously that's why you get Rami Malek to voice it. Is this?
But then when we see Philbert, it is. It's tricky because, like, trying to map it one-to-one with the real world is maybe a mistake, but, like, the opening titles are very, like, True Detective, like, spoofy, but then the quality of writing is, like, deliberately a lot shitter than True Detective.
Okay, we have to discuss this now, then. Okay, so True Detective, maybe it's Nick Pezzolato is they're taking the piss out of. And obviously he's now had True Detective taken away from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he's not writing the fourth season of True Detective. That is,
yeah. Like it could be like it's taking a dig at like season two of True Detective or something. And I'm like the one defender of that season walking the planet Earth.
Yeah,
not as good.
I think we have to discuss. Okay, so Philbert's a hit.
Philbert is a hit.
Do we think Philbert's a good show?
No.
Like if we take away from the fact that like obviously they're writing it to be jokes and take the piss out of like a specific brand of prestige television, do we think if a show like Philbert dropped in the real world, would we like it?
I mean, a detective show with like the ghost of a dead partner and his dead wife and And I assume the missiles arriving at the end was a gentle play at the leftovers. But
the leftovers is the year before this with that episode, so yeah. Maybe it is them.
That moment has to be from that. Like you know, it's super good, but it's also like, oh yeah, now there's fucking nuclear missiles in this intimate show about grief and depression.
The funniest thing that I can do to people who like do not know what the leftovers is about is to just kind of like launch into, yeah, it's a show about grief, depression, and then also there's a nuclear missile strike in the middle of the third season.
And the president's way of identifying himself is his significant penis.
What a wonderful show.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a show like that would probably be a hit. But, like, the scenes as presented, like, I continue to see why they call you sassy kind of thing. Like, just really, really bad. And, like, that was my wife's landline. yeah, it's fun. Like, I feel like they're just having their cake and eating it, where they're like, we can both mock a certain type of TV and then also say it's a huge hit, kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I think it is a True Detective / Mr. Robot thing, and I think that's why it's important you get Rami Malek to do this.
Yeah.
It's so funny that this is, like, the other project that Rami Malek has the year with an Oscar.
He's so, like, good here.
He's so good, and yeah. It's a shame that his career has kind of taken a nosedive after this.
How was he in Bond?
He's fine in Bond. Like, mm-hmm. Like it feels like they cut a load of stuff out that would have made him more interesting.
Right.
He's terrible in Amsterdam.
Isn't everyone terrible in Amsterdam?
Everyone's terrible in Amsterdam. And then in Oppenheimer. Oh God. Okay. So in Oppenheimer, he shows up in the background of one scene.
Yeah.
And like you're like, that's Rami Malek. What? Like everyone else who's like been a big name star has like had something to do. An Academy Award winner, Rami Malek, shows up, and you're like, "The fuck is Rami Malek doing here?" And this happens like two or three times throughout the movie, and you're like, "Why is Rami Malek playing this like nothing role where he has like said two lines?" And then the end of the movie comes around, and you go, like, "Oh, that's why you got Rami Malek." But then the credits happen, and he's like the fourth billed person in the entire movie because he's Academy Award winner Rami Malek.
Mm, yeah, it's like. Like, yeah, you will eat Jack Quaid's scraps, Rami Malek.
Well, exactly. Jack Quaid's got so much more to do in that movie than Rami Malek does, but Rami Malek's an Academy Award winner, so he kind of gets a level of, like, prestige bump that happens to it. But
that's something you can put on the back of the DVD, like, including Academy Award winners, blah, 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 and blah.
Exactly.
And Jack Quaid don't have no fucking Academy Award.
He doesn't.
Yet.
I watched the first two Hunger Games last night.
Oh, yeah?
And let me tell you, I was like, the fuck is Jack Quaid doing here?
Oh, is he in them?
Oh, he's like one of the like the bad guys in the first movie.
Oh, okay.
He's the one who kills Rue, the little girl.
Oh, no. I remember Rue. I remember liking Rue.
He kills Rue, and then like in the second movie, when Katniss has like a trauma flashback, Jack Quaid shows up for that as well, for like a 2-second scene. Obviously, he isn't Jack Quaid at that point, but he's still... like the child of two big Hollywood stars.
Yeah, it's Dennis Quaid's dipshit son at that point.
Not star of The Boys and Star Trek and
that new Superman show. He's pretty
that
good.
That new Superman
in.
Show.
Yeah. Flip the Vicar is a lot of fun.
I'm gonna say something. My favorite Flip episode of the season is the one where he's a dolphin.
Yes. Pretty good. Pretty good. Gina, his Bojack's co-star, Bojack's girlfriend, Bojack's latest victim. Stephanie Beatrice putting in really good work. And, like, I feel like, you know, she obviously blows up because of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And then, like, you know, she's developed this reputation as being, like, so hard-edged and serious. But, like, she's a huge, like, musical theatre geek, and, like, she'll end up in the Heights a long time after this and everything. And I really like them having her sing at two different points and, like, have her be deliberately bad in one of them and then actually good in the other one kind of thing. She's a trooper. Like, I feel probably taking out some frustrations with the industry through this character. To my knowledge, she's never been, like, made to do nude scenes and stuff like that. But, like, you know, she's, I'm sure, something... either firsthand or like has friends that have had to go through this kind of stuff where, like, you know, she's like, oh yeah, I love playing characters where their favorite pastimes are not wearing bras and cold rooms and stuff like that. And
and doing the whole, like, I've done 13 pilot seasons and like none of the shows were hits, or if they were picked up, they got cancelled after like one season.
Yeah.
This is the first time she's ever been mentioned in a review. It's kind of like really sad and tragic.
She's quite a sweet character. But I feel like I've already forgotten the name of, was it Wanda, his girlfriend?
Yes, Wanda. Yeah. Isn't
it? Like, Wanda is obviously quite a like big in your face character, and like Hollyhock's obviously not his girlfriend, but if we're like talking about his like emotional companion season to season, like Hollyhock's quite a big presence, and Anna Spanakopita is like insane in her own way and everything, and like Gina feels a lot more understated, but like, yeah, she's very like quite sweet and earnest, and like, you know, seeing it start to go right for her and then go very, very wrong. Yeah, it's a really good performance, I think. Yeah, Yolanda briefly around, like around for a lot less time than I remembered her being, as Todd's asexual girlfriend, and like them realizing all we have in common is that we are asexual, and like, you know, that a very mature thing to put in a TV show like this, especially with your like most silly character, but like that's gotta be an I'm a straight person, but like it must be quite a harrowing aspect of the queer community that like sometimes that is all you have, is that you are both like in this niche demographic, and like just trying to find anyone like you is the first challenge, and then finding someone who is both, you know, the same proclivities as you, and then also you have a genuine connection with.
I think that's why you see, like, there's obviously been this massive surge of people identifying and figure out their identity in the age of the internet, is because you're able to connect with people who've got like minds and actually able to like put a thing to that. And it's why this is interesting, because obviously Todd is exclusively meeting people that he's met in real life by chance, and he's not in those communities online where I feel like a lot of this identity is kind of like cemented.
I mean, he does go to his like asexual meetup group, but like that's like six people, and like, you know, two of them are married to each other.
Exactly, like they're already romantically entangled and stuff like that. Yeah. And again, I don't think Todd has got the introspection he needed at those points to figure out what exactly he is, because obviously he is like, you, because he got that thing with Emily later on in the season where she's
he like wants to be her boyfriend, but then like have her be pleasured by the sex. Henry Fondle coming for Vincent Adultman's crown as Ben's fave character.
It's basically 1A, 1B in terms of characters.
How can you choose between two dreams? But yeah, like that he wants, it's a really tough position because he like almost resents that she has sexual feelings, you know, like oh, can't we just, like, he wants her time and he wants like to be the person in her life, but he doesn't want any of the rest, and like he almost holds against her that she does want more than that, and like she's like really chill with him being like that is a big thing they build to, and then as soon as he drops it on her, she's like, oh, that's fine. Which I quite like that about this ongoing story, is that she just immediately was accepting of him. But yeah, he is going through some struggles, and like, you know, a huge part of it is he's clearly not an emotionally mature human being. Like, he is a large adult boy, like,
yes.
And then Pickles Aplenty, who, yeah, I just do not like her. It blew my mind to learn it's Hong Chau, Lady True from Watchmen. But yeah, I feel some of it's on purpose. Like she is kind of like the obnoxious 20-something woo girl. She's obviously like an innocent in this, and is the victim of bad treatment from Mr. Peanut Butter and everything like that. But yeah, I just find it really annoying.
I think it feels like this is a show obviously made by people who were kind of like probably in their early 30s when they started making it, I want to say. Uh-huh. I mean, how old was Raphael of Waxberg at this point? I mean, he's 39 years old, so yeah, so probably in his early 30s when he starts like doing BoJack Horseman. So when you are kind of like in your mid 30s and trying to write about characters in their 20s, I think it kind of misses the mark in kind of the specificity that they have in terms of the emotional depth of other stuff. And I understand they're going for something broader with Pickles, where they're kind of going for like all of Mr. Peanut Butter's others kind of like relationships have been people in their 20s, but like less outwardly fun, whereas Pickles is very much like, I'm an Instagram influencer and I'm like a waitress and stuff like that. And I don't know. Like they're going for something. I don't think they quite hit the specificity to what they need to have for it to land for a full season. Even if like Hong Chao is like so game for doing that voice and stuff like that. It's so different to like anything else I've seen her in, obviously another Academy Award nominated person post the show, but also this is the only season that she's in of BoJack, because she doesn't come back to voice Pickles next season.
They replaced her, didn't they?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because like the character is very one note, like they hint at doing emotional depth for her at points, but it kind of is I don't know, it's an interesting character, and I think it makes, she is more useful in what she says about Mr. Peanut Butter.
I think that's feels like a prop in the Mr. Peanut Butter story, and it's like hitting him on the head with the things where I like he frustrates me, where like he does just get away with being, like, he's not done anything as extremely awful as BoJack, but, like, you know, BoJack, like, at times is genuinely trying and is met with, like, people telling him he's garbage, and then Mr. Peanut Butter just does anything he wants and is obnoxious and is loved for it. Like,
yeah, he is still a 50-year-old man dating a 25-year-old, is where we are now at the end of the season, because I think, like, Mr. Peanut Butter's 52 at the end of the show, even Diane is like a far better match for him, because she's in her like mid-30s, so like even it's still like a 13-year age gap versus a 25-year age gap, like the age gap just expands.
Or like when he talks about something he did in 1993 and she's like, that's the year I was born. Right, I'm gonna talk season long arcs, but we are gonna need to change up the format a little bit, because I might have quite a controversial pick for my favourite episode that might mean we need to talk about some of this in more depth. So I'll just say them, and then we can talk about them in a bit. So for BoJack, obviously Filbert is in production. During filming, he injures himself, gets hooked on painkillers. They cause him to lose his grip on reality, culminating in a very fucked up incident where he is choking his co-star, Gina. And then he finally admits he has a problem and checks into rehab. I think we're probably safe to talk about Princess Carolyn's arc. While producing Phil, but she's also on this like rocky road of trying to adopt a baby. We learn more about her back, you know, her growing up in North Carolina, and like when she got pregnant at I think it's 18. And this is where Amy Sedaris' brother is voicing Princess Carolyn's mother in a crazy fucking turn up for the books. But is your read that she miscarried or that she got an abortion?
I think she miscarried,
right,
is my read. Just because she says that she's had multiple beforehand.
She does say that, but like,
I mean, I guess you could.
Isn't there a thing where like,
if you have an abortion at a certain age, it kind of increases the rate, increases the percentage chance of you having a miscarriage later on in life. Yes.
Because it does come immediately on the heels of, like, you have David Diggs playing the father of the man that, you know, got her pregnant, laying out her whole life for her, and then, like, the very next thing is, like, she's not pregnant anymore. And like, I don't know, but I was like, was this on purpose? But it could go either way. But like, you know, again, every time we get this window into Princess Carolyn's life and see like how aggressively bad her life has been, and yet she's such a positive person in the face of it, it's like the true hero of the show, honestly.
But also, like, this is the Princess Carolyn episode this season is like my least favorite of her episodes.
Of the big ones, yeah, for sure. And like, you know, Ralph, she has to meet with Ralph because she wants to. Mr. Peanut Butter wants to option a card for a movie, Birthday Dad, which they will get a lot of mileage out of. Because it is one of Ralph's greeting card company cards, she has to meet with him for business, and that is the night she gets one of her calls to go to the hospital and adopt. And like, so he's kind of like, I suggested adopting and you broke up with me and now you're single, you want to adopt and I haven't moved on. Would you like to do this together? And then she's like, no, go to hell. And then she gives such a good speech about being able to raise a kid by herself that the mother is like, oh, yeah, no, you're right, I could raise it by myself.
So question on this, because we're probably not going to discuss this particular episode, no. But like, you said that your memory of Ralph was he turned out to be a complete scumbag.
Yeah, not really, I guess. I don't know, I think I just remembered him, like, having some quite, like, not quite soft boy as a ploy, but like, just like revealing very casually some quite gross attitudes towards like women and motherhood and stuff like that. And I guess none of that is really here, but like, yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe there's something in the final season, or is this his last appearance?
I think this is his last appearance.
All
I
right.
think
well, after this, I apologize to fictional mouse.
I think we pivot into like Princess Carolyn's like end goal boyfriend in the final season, and yeah, Ralph is fully gone, and like, and I think it's like one of the most interesting relationships in the entire show is this like adult relationship, and she's just like, no, because of like your subtle micro reactions to things.
Yeah, I think I guess it's that stuff, and I just blew it up, but like, you know, it's not invalid for her to like be very turned off by his responses to some of those questions, like that he wasn't willing to like hold her hand. Well, you know, not that he wasn't willing to hold her hand through it, but like, you know,
yeah, I mean, I think Ralph is one of the best sketch characters, and I think this relationship is one of the best sketch relationships, yeah. Just in terms of the realism of it didn't actually collapse for a like particular reason, and no. They actually probably
Very real. Like,
yeah,
you know.
They probably were quite well suited for each other in reality, but obviously there was just a thing they couldn't move past as people, and I think. And again, it's just,
and I think she also is, she doesn't like being told what to do, kind of thing. And she, you know, when he's like, well, obviously we have to raise this baby together, and she's like, no, fuck you, I don't need you. And she doesn't need him, and like, she does end up with Untitled Princess Carolyn Project, the little porcupine baby, which, you know, she does go and spend an episode with the mother, and then ends up not getting the baby, and then she doesn't get another baby, and then she eventually gets that baby again, and we will see her raising that baby next season. Todd accidentally ends up president of whattimeisitrightnow.com's network programming and ad sales.
Mm-hmm.
Only in turn to build the terrifying sex robot Henry Fonda.
Wait, no, he is not terrifying. He is lovely.
He's haunting. Haunting design. He builds this for Emily, and it ends up CEO of whattimeisitrightnow.com. Only to then be hit with a sexual harassment lawsuit. And they love this kind of joke where... So Todd has recorded many erotic lines, such as,
I
love it
inside of you.
Yes. I love it when you call me father, etc. And him just saying all of these, everyone just twists them into things that could, including stuff... Like, I want to put a baby in you, or I want to make love to you because of my brain. Yeah, you're right. And like, more, give me more is taken as ordering more episodes of Filbert. And then it's when he says something not at all sexual where he is hit with the sexual harassment lawsuit.
Well, it's like they go through this entire speech where they go, like, nice boobs. And she's like, yes, they were nice. Like,
they were nice, but they were boobs. Like,
yeah. And then he's just like, I need power, and or like, not enough power. And she's like, what do you mean I don't have enough power?
Yeah. And then Todd ultimately has, well, he, you know. It gets the entire network folded, and they return to being a website for figuring out what time it is right now, which kills the show, and then Todd has to take him out to a tree and kill him with a stun gun, a taser, whatever. And I really like the touch that Todd is wearing a breakaway suit the entire time, because Todd does spend the season in a suit but still with his hat and just openly being bad at his job, and like, you know, in their big drama episode, you have him being like, I did not realize that this fell under the purview of the president of ad sales. So please, if anyone would like to buy $30 million worth of ad time, and I will take any offers, for him to reveal that.
This might be my favorite Todd season.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I think just from beginning to end, he has like a good emotional like episode for him with Yolanda. He's got a good it got a good comedy arc with Henry Fondle and being the CEO, but then also has like nice emotional stings throughout the season. It's just really well balanced for Todd this season.
Yeah.
And again, Henry Fondle is like an all-time great character on the show.
It's very good. It's very good. And like also, you know, that he ends up with this job because someone just reads off all the things he's accomplished in previous seasons. Like he, like BoJack wants him to kill a scene where he has to be nude by like interviewing to be a janitor and then sneaking in and like tampering with something. And his interviewer, who I think is Whoopi Goldberg, is like, oh, wait, you were governor of California and, you know, you ran your own theme park and just all these things we've seen happen. He's like, you're way overqualified. yeah, good season for Todd. Diane, amidst her divorce from Mr. Peanut Butter, moves into a tiny studio apartment. She goes to Vietnam to try and, like, reconnect with her roots. Has a bad time there. Gets a job writing on Filbert. Falls out with BoJack. And I think more than all of that, she is the most vocal she's ever been about her own internal struggles. Like, this is a show about the big depressed horse and all of his problems. But along the way, like, I mean, part of the friction between them is his insistence that they are the same, which she does not like. But like, Diane has been struggling in front of her eyes from basically the word go. And she is, it's really coming to a head for her as well. And like, she gets the end of season driving off to nowhere to a soundtrack moment that we've seen from BoJack, kind of twice, which is quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, like, I think this is the season where she is, because she's bouncing, because she doesn't have Mr. Peanut Butter around as much, you kind of get this like sense of like she's a little bit lost, and she doesn't want to be with BoJack, she doesn't want to be with Mr. Peanut Butter, and so you end up with this void that I think really helps Diane's arc for the season this year. Like they use the artifice of the fact that she can't spend time with the two characters she spent the most time with, realistically, or at least in a personal setting, to really help.
I think being forced to be alone and confront, like, you know, she has all these lofty ideas. She has the story she tells herself and others about who she is and what she does. And then there's the reality of it. And it's like, you know, I'm not a, you know, young idealist 20-something who's going to change the world anymore. I am working for a basically BuzzFeed. When they talk about pivoting to video, that was so like of the time, wasn't it? And now it's like pivot to AI and lay everybody off. And it's like, you know, the jig is up kind of thing, and it is your, you know, time has come calling for you in terms of like grappling with who you are as a fully formed adult person. And like, you know, Mr. Peanut Butter is arguably this like safety blanket where it's like she sees all the flaws and the ways they're not right for each other, but at least he's like attentive and present and positive and, you know, let's face it, wealthy and like, you know, provides for her. And then like, you know, BoJack, I think the thing with her and BoJack is, and I think he maybe has even accused her of this before, where like, I think she needs to know that he is worse than her so that she feels better about herself, where she can take the moral high ground against him. And I think that's why she really, really objects to the idea of him saying we're the same. And like, you know, she hasn't done awful things, but she is kind of a shitty person.
Yeah, I mean, the way that she writes BoJack's real life into the show.
Yeah. Like, and I know he did these things, but like that's a fucked up thing to do. And like making him read the lines live, and she doesn't know the full story of it at the time either. Like it could have been a giant misunderstanding. And like they've done this running joke where like she keeps meeting up with her friend. Is she called like skinny somebody?
Yeah, I mean, what, there's the one where like they're just like, well, we need to like spend more time listening to our problems, and she'll just go barrel through into her problems again.
Yeah,
like,
just ignores her all the time. Yeah. And it's like, I think this is a real type of person where she's so obsessed with being a moral arbiter of other people and presenting herself as a good person and being like relentless, and like she'll talk to her, she talks to Stephanie of all people about like her high standards for herself and everyone else. And it's like, yes, we should aspire to more, but we are all people and we are all going through things. And like, I don't, she's almost painting a world where like, if you are not 100% good, you are on the garbage heap, and I refuse you as a person almost. But then she is always like forgiving of BoJack. So yeah, it is an interesting one. And like she'll obviously have almost her own pocket season next time out. Interesting. And then Mr. Peanut Butter, you know, we kind of talked about it with Pickles, that he's entered into another relationship with a 20-year-old. You know, he is confronted with truths about him, and it is all made more complicated when he starts sleeping with Diane again, and he's like, oh, I'm still in love with you, but... Yeah, and then he panics and proposes to Pickles. We're not going to talk about that. And we're also not talking about BoJack's arc, because... when we have to pick two episodes, there is a strong chance we won't be talking about a certain thing. So we'll get into that. So let's play our favorite game. Does Ben remember what happens in episodes? Let's find out. You're going to say what happened in a sentence. God. And then I'm just going to hit you with a random joke that I think is fun that I'm otherwise not going to talk about from that episode. So overall, episode 50, the first of this season... the light bulb scene.
I mean, this is BoJack doesn't want to do a nude scene.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah.
BoJack doesn't want to do a nude scene. Everything kind of like comes from that. I mean, we've already said Todd gets the job as head of ad sales in this episode.
Yeah.
There's all the stuff with Gina being there. Yeah, but like that's basically it, isn't
it? Yeah, I'll tell you that. Todd says, a janitor. I've always wanted to janet. Pretty good. The dog days are over.
Diane writes a Girl Crush article about her time in Vietnam.
Yeah. As I say, I'm not a huge fan of this one, but I do like when all the stuff at the airport where she's saying to use the screen, and the sort of airport attendant says, say nice things about me, the screen is my supervisor. It's just, you know, it's very, very, yeah, very good, very, very... Yeah, you know, you go most places and like you've got human people standing there while people just interact with technology. It's all very good. Planned obsolescence. Good luck.
I think this is the one where they make Gina sing.
Ah, good. Yeah, it is.
But really, it's the episode where Todd meets Yolanda's family and they have like a wacky sex comedy with Yolanda's twin sister and her dominatrix mother or porn star mother and all the rest of it.
Yes. And my favourite joke is also your favourite joke. As Courtney Cox said when she discovered a rotting corpse in the woods near the Cougar Town set, good God, I hope you're not busy.
I think the kicker on that one is the delivery afterwards of, that one's a thinker.
Yes, yes. another, like, not great one, but, like, you know, they get some good stuff in there. BoJack the Feminist.
Kind of the big issue episode of the season. This is, they're trying to cast the side character for the season and get a famously cancelled Hollywood celebrity to do it, and then they just get into cancel culture, forgiveness culture, and all the rest of it. This is the one where Angela Bassett comes back for this episode.
She does, and she plays. You know, we recall that BoJack almost confessed all to a journalist on his press tour, and Anna made it go away, and it turned out she still has that recording, and now that they're like on opposite sides of an issue, she does drop that bomb to Diane, which leads to all of the tension with them. Kind of fucked up. Not a brilliant one for one-liners, but I did like them say, I think Diane says, you get to drop in and play Joss Whedon and everyone loves you, and it's just like, yeah, like I just can't help but think of that picture of him wearing that t-shirt that's like, this is what a feminist looks like, and like, you know, knowing everything that happened with him. In fact, when they wrote that line, had the truth come out about him?
This is the year that Justice League comes out.
Okay.
So I think there were obviously murmurings in the industry, I think. Yeah, I don't know whether or not it's a knowing line, or whether or not it's a... like one of those things where like you come back years later and go like, yeah, we put that in on purpose to be dramatically ironic. Like the 10 people in Hollywood who knew at the time would get it, but the general audience would not realize the subtext to us using that name.
But even without it, it is like he was parachuted in as this kind of like the face of male feminism, and it was he does have some pretty gross...
His famously terrible Wonder Woman script and all the rest of it, which...
The Amelia Earhart story.
This is our Princess Carolyn episode of the season, which is basically she goes home to North Dakota, yeah. North Carolina, and basically, yeah, we've discussed about this one where like she's got the past story of her having getting pregnant at 18, and then also trying to convince someone from her hometown that she's able to like adopt the child, but obviously falls through by the end of the episode.
Yeah. She mentions a backdoor pilot, and then the potential mother says, I wish Strib was a backdoor pilot, then I wouldn't be pregnant. Just, you know, a very highbrow anal sex joke there.
Yeah, but they then underline it by saying, I mean,
Yeah. Jamie Presley, like, surprisingly good there. I say surprisingly good, like, she's a good actress, but, you know, it's quite a... Yeah, they're not like making a big show of, oh, here's Jamie Presley.
It's been a while since My Name is Earl, which is exactly this kind of character, but like kind of heightened, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you won't remember anything about this one. Free churro.
No, nothing. Not ringing any bells whatsoever. I think we should skip this one.
Okay. Very hard to pick one joke out of what is essentially a stand-up comedy routine, but I do like, and I don't even have it as the quote, but when he does that sequence of three jokes where he's like swapping words around, and then the rule of three, like on the third one, he's like, because you're a massive bitch or whatever. yeah, very good. Interior sub, I mean, it's written int.sub, but interior sub.
This is the one which is the kind of the... The framing of the story is Diane's therapist and a mediator for Todd and Princess Carolyn discussing their hijinks for the week, but like trying to disguise their identities. But it's basically just, this is like the most focused on the set of Filbert we've been in a while, because like the entire thing is Filbert drama from like start to finish.
Bobo the angsty zebra.
I like... Which is your favorite of the... of the disguises that they use to like cover them up? Is it Diana? Is it the hand?
Not
Is
Princess it... Diana, definitely not. That one's kind of lame if you ask me. I mean, Flippy is pretty fucking good. Like changing Flip to an actual... I think Bobo the Angsty Zebra is like surprise... Like you get used to it surprisingly quickly, and he's like, he kind of suits being... I don't know if it's like the Filbert costume. Like suits the color tone.
They also stick him in the opening credits as well.
That is a nice touch that they change the opening credits. I like as a name, Mr. Chocolate Hazelnut Spread, and obviously Tangled Fog of Pulsating Yearning in the Shape of a Woman isn't bad either. Yeah, they're all pretty good. But yeah, like that's a fun one where like they're dressing it in such silliness, but like it's actually quite a big one dramatically. I do like them saying Jessica Chastain takes whatever Amy Adams says no to, and then they say Bryce Dallas Howard takes whatever Jessica Chastain says no to, like the pecking order of redheaded dramatic actresses. Number 8, Mr. Peanut Butter's Booze.
This is set over 4 Halloweens in the course of BoJack hosting an against his will Halloween party
for like 25 straight years.
25 straight years from 1993 to 2018, and it's basically, well, they must have skipped 2016, 17, one of those years.
Yeah, when he was away. Yeah.
Unless they just broke into his house.
Probably. And... it was just abandoned while he was...
this is basically just... We get more on, like, again, they've cast such good actresses as all of Mr. Peanut Butter's relationships that it actually kind of, like, makes this one feel, like, really good and kind of, like, you... It's told non-sequentially, so you get lots of like little seeding jokes, like Jessica Biel being upset because she wasn't cast in The Mummy, and then BoJack going like, "Remember that time that woman freaked out because she saw a mummy?"
Yeah. again, this is specific to me, and I guess to you, because I've been doing the Lost rewatch, when Mr. Piedmont says, I get there's a smoke monster, but otherwise it's just Gilligan's Island, right? I just tickled me in particular. It's not the best joke by a long stretch, but yeah, I just liked it. Ancient history.
This is BoJack and Hollyhock, the kind of big episode for the season, which is BoJack is taking too many painkillers and Hollyhock flushes them down the drain. So they go on a madcap quest across Hollywood to get more pills.
Thank you. One of the earliest pieces of continuity. Yes. When she walks into his house and obviously freaks out because of what happened there, he says, you look like you've just seen a ghost in the Shell screening and you're Scarlett Johansson's publicist. Mwah.
Still not seen it.
It's a thing. Head in the clouds.
Is this the premiere party for Filbert? So it like is. It's basically just they're watching Filbert essentially, and everyone is. I don't like this one. Kind of like doesn't stick in my mind that much beyond.
I think the last three blend together because it is sort of a. Yeah, this is the one where Diane like confronts him at the premiere.
The argument's really good.
It is really well done, yeah, for sure. But it's kind of like, it's just a giant prelude to what is about to happen. Again, not a banger one for one-liners, and like this is one of those where I'm picking it out, and it sounds like I find this funny, but it's more like, you know, the satire of it. But let me tell you, that 39-year-old actress is going places. Like, them continuing to zero in on how horribly Hollywood treats women. Again, the showstopper.
BoJack's addiction reaches crescendo. We get a classic BoJack kind of like out of time, out of place episode. Mm-hmm. In the course of production of season two, feels like they almost finished season two for them to get to the scene, like the climactic scene where like BoJack is choking Gina by the end of this episode. Like, it feels like they could probably release what they've got fairly satisfactorily.
Yeah.
Like, kill Filbert off after that and then run with Gina as the lead actress in it.
Yeah.
I assume the plan was the other way, where Filbert kills Gina and the show continues without her, would be my guess.
I assume, in
classic
bring in the next kind of like topless lady for him to have a bad relationship with. We get a lot of like, this is where we like see actual scenes from Filbert. And it's just the phrasing of it, but like, because there's obviously been like nuclear war or something in season two, because they're filming season two, and he says the hospitals have been delivering some pretty wacky looking babies. yeah, I just like that kind of thing. And then, you know, a clever from the showstopper to the stopped show is our finale.
Yeah, which is BoJack and Gina do an interview to kind of discuss the fact that he choked her, and kind of everyone is reeling with the decisions that were kind of made in that final episode, and ultimately it ends with Diane taking BoJack to rehab, and Princess Carolyn gets a Porcupine Baby by the end of the episode. And is this the one where Peanut Butter proposes as well?
Yes, he proposes. He's going to tell Pickles that he cheated on her, and he instead panics and proposes instead. Rami Malek is in Princess Carolyn's office, and he's talking to her, and then he realizes she's not even there, and then he just delivers the most incredible performance in the show and says, unless I was Princess Carolyn the whole time, slowly puts on her lipstick and then says, oh, fish! So fucking good. I'm also tickled by the fact that Wikipedia hyperlinks every animal that is mentioned. So when they're like...
Wait, what?
Yeah, so if you look at the descriptions of the episode, it's like, she sets up an interview with a chinchilla, with the chinchilla Biscuits Braxby, and they've hyperlinked chinchilla. And like Todd kills Henry Fonda with a taser. Taser is hyperlinked. Like, how do you choose these things? You know? I guess that's a noun. I guess I will link it. Incredible.
What would be the funniest thing to like pills, and then you like pills?
Yeah, painkillers is linked. BoJack's painkillers hyperlinked.
Great.
Yeah. Intensive care unit has been hyperlinked. Oh my god, Wikipedia is a whole mine of comedy. Right. Well done. You were not stumped by any of them, despite your lack of belief in yourself.
I'm actually shocked I managed to get all of those. I guess they were more memorable single episodes.
I think the titles are quite... Well, remembering Planned Obsolescence is about what it is. It's quite good. But yes. Other than that, like a lot of the titles are quite
telling. The only reason that sticks in my mind is that I just remember that episode 3 is the sex comedy episode.
Yeah. Right, so I have teased it already. This is the part where we pick our favorite one each and we give them a deep dive. I have a controversial pick and I'm really sorry.
What's your prediction about which one I picked? So I'm obviously...
I think the obvious big two are Freechuro and The Showstopper.
Yes, and you are going to skip on The Showstopper to let me do Freechuro is what I imagine is going to happen. And I do not know... Because you've said you don't like...
I think I am going to do that, and that's why I thought we could just... When talking about BoJack's season-long arc, we could just wrap up what happens in The Showstopper. The Showstopper is a great episode of television. Like, you know, all the cutting back and forth between Caesar and Filbert with things that are actually happening to him and all of that. And you can talk me down from this, but I really like Mr. Peanut Butter's booze.
I knew, I was like, it's between...
I'm a sucker for, like...
Mr. Peanut Butter's booze as, like, the two.
It's not BoJack the Feminist. I don't like that one. I'm just a sucker for, like, the multiple timeline thing and, like, the clever... As you said, like, playing off the jokes in multiple timelines kind of thing. And for me, it's like... This feels a very bold statement. Futurama, right? Everybody fucking loves Seymour, Jurassic Park. That is a bad episode of television with a, like, really good moment in it, and people give that episode like 10 out of 10, one of the best episodes of television ever. Half of that episode is like Leela and Amy wrestling in like ridiculous costumes and like all the like, it's fine, and then it suddenly is like so emotionally devastating.
Yeah, like, and for me it's a Fry-ish is a better version of the episode that they're going for.
1000%. And for me, like, I've done a lot of, you know, I ranked all of Batman and all this stuff. I reward entire episodes more than, like, there's a really cool thing that happens in this episode, personally. And for me, I'm not saying that The Showstopper isn't really well written and deployed and everything, but I think as an exercise in, like, writing and, like, joke telling, Mr. Peanut Butter's booze is incredible. So that would be my pick.
Go for it.
How would you... I mean, Freechuro is first chronologically, so do you want to talk about that one, or should we get rid of my, like, controversial pick?
No. I mean, obviously, like, Showstopper, I think it makes sense, because it's similar to what I think we did in, like, season one, where it's like, BoJack seasons always build up to, like, a dramatic head, and it's kind of normally in that kind of, like, penultimate episode, and Time's Arrow is an exception because it pivots into a different character's viewpoint, whereas, as you say, the final three kind of all blend together. They are a arc of the season, and Showstopper is, again... They're playing with reality. It's not quite as good as Time's Arrow.
No, I don't. Obviously, or I would have picked it.
Yeah.
And it's playing in a space that they established right in the first season with, like, the big drug episode and stuff like that. And, like, you know, the sort of drug trip he does with Sarah Lynn. And they've always gone to this kind of thing. And it's not that this isn't better than all of those, because it probably is. It's just I've kind of seen that trick from them before,
and
for me it's kind of bringing it full circle to talking about this as a season of television, as a storyline, and as a, like, oh shit when BoJack chokes Gina, huge. But, like, I personally am not, like, completely bowled over by Showstopper as just here's 20 minutes of television.
It's one of those things where, like, I like the blending of reality and the show, like the opening with the title cards to Filbert and having Todd come in and break the scene, and you've got, like, all the places where, like, he's hidden the drugs around the house. You're not actually sure whether or not those are places he's actually hidden drugs or if they're part of his, like, trip. Like, it does really well with those things. But I know I think this is a very Matt episode of Mr. Peanut Butter's Booth. So I think, like, we should devote time to it. I mean, again, there's so many good Jessica Biel jokes.
Yes, in there are. There absolutely are. Let's talk about Freechuro, though, because my word, how many shows can pull off? I mean, you get a prologue with, like, BoJack and his father before the opening credits, which is very well done. But, like, that's also Will Arnett. But yeah, like, how many shows can pull off one character for 20 minutes?
This is Will Arnett for 25 minutes. 25 this minutes, is yeah. Will Arnett for 25 minutes just delivering everything. And like, you hear, because obviously this is, I think this is the only episode of the season that Bob Waxberg writes. Like, this is like him, the solo credit of the season on this one. This is obviously the one that kind of like got all the attention. I think they got nominated for an Emmy for the first time for this episode, but they lose to a Simpsons episode.
Of course.
Jesus Christ. God, like, just, I need to do this. So they are nominated against Mad About the Toy from The Simpsons Season 30, Adventure Time the Series Finale, The Planned Parenthood Show for the Big Mouth, Just One of the Boys for Now, and BoJack Horseman Free Churro. Like, either you do Come Along with Me or Free Churro in this season. And I know the Planned Parenthood show was like a good episode in that season of Big Mouth, but like, Jesus Christ, it just Emmy voters going back to a well of like, I recognize that show, I'm going to vote for that show, which is just fucking depressing.
I know.
God Christ, awful. But yeah, like, this is just, it's so good. And like, all the little choices you hear, like, that they think about where, like, they have the I think one of the notes they have is that they can't hear the people that BoJack is speaking to enough in the mix of the first one of the episodes, so they add in the kind of like vocal,
like, coughing and like gasping and chair shuffling and stuff like that.
Just so it doesn't sound like he's alone in a room, and you pay off the kind of the final reveal of the episode where BoJack
Good.
He's at the wrong funeral,
and like, that is that in itself. A million shows could do that joke. It is that they pepper in his comments that she wanted an open casket and he refused to do it, like, multiple times. And then he opens the casket, and like, that would have, if he had simply done what she wanted, none of this would have happened. Is the kicker for me.
And just the fact that when you think about the episode, the amount of times he calls the person that's in this coffin a bitch.
I know.
And just all these people are sat there in silence when this like, C-list celebrity has walked into the room and started delivering like a diatribe.
And likewise, that you see the entire audience are lizards, and that doesn't ring any alarm bells for him.
He's so in his own head about like what he wants to do that he doesn't even pay attention to who might be there. Yeah. Like, because I don't even think they mentioned other episodes, like whether or not there was anyone in attendance at the actual funeral. Like, did Hollyhock come to town? Did like Princess Carolyn?
I doubt it,
come?
Given she poisoned her. But
yeah, very true. But yeah, like, just the entire episode is just, there's so many jokes. Like, the way they, I mean, they again, like, I've read up on this one. The way they talk about like how do you structure an episode of a television show in which the one character is speaking, but also managed to do like an A story, a B story, and a C story.
Absolutely. Like, TV is wrapped around that. Like, you have supporting characters so you can take a break and like keep it fresh for the audience. And yeah, they functionally do it by like having, like, he's almost, he's onto these like tangents where it's like, now let's learn about how his father died. And like, now let's get into the like emotional part between him and his mum, and now let's just have him do a series of jokes. And like, the churro, like, the reason it's called Free Churro is like a recurring bit. So it's like his long stories and his long jokes and stuff like that almost become the A, the B, and the C. Yeah, it's incredible. And like, I think the biggest compliment I can pay it is you don't feel like you're just listening to one person for 25 minutes. Like,
no, yeah.
Like, I remember when I first watched it, and like, I guess at some point it tweaked for me, we're just gonna see BoJack, aren't we? But like, it actually flies by. Like, you think, okay, strap in, you're gonna hear a guy talk for 20 minutes or 25. And like, before you know it, you're like on 18 minutes or something like that. Like, it is a remarkable piece of writing.
Yeah, I think I genuinely think this might be the best performance that Will Arnett's ever given in his career.
Oh, gotcha. Like,
and I mean, he is so good in like Arrested Development, and he's got like so many classic roles. But this is just such a commanding role.
I think the biggest thing is that his two biggest strengths as a performer a physical comedy and, like, playing off other people. And he's doing neither of those here. Like, this is just him pure dramatic acting. And like, we've seen him, well, like, we've heard him be really good in BoJack up to now. And, like, one of the biggest things of the show is, hey, Will Arnett's actually got it. But, like, there are, like, people who I know are incredible actors who I don't know if I would trust to talk for 25 minutes. And he fucking crushes it. And, like, the material is like, I don't want to over-reward either half of it. Like, it is a two-hander. It's like, he has got the goods to perform it for 20 minutes and keep the energy up and down and up and down and hit all the notes. But it's also, like, the material is there to prop him up. Yeah, just so fucking good. And, like, getting into stuff like, my mum died and I'm now having to emotionally support a complete stranger who's burst into tears because they're so sorry they offended me kind of thing. Like, it just feels very true to life where, like, you see people at funerals who are, like, almost, like, they're the ones who should be grieving and they're having to, like, give emotional, like, energy to everyone else. Yeah, it just feels very true to life. And
yeah.
The whole I see you joke where she keeps saying, I see you. And he muses on, like, at, you know, all the different deliveries and meanings of that. And then for him to go, oh, shit, she was saying, I see you, like, the intensive care, you know?
Like, yeah, and you mean, but you've also got, like, I mean, there's so many, like, cultural references. Like, he mentions Becca. He mentions, like, Maud, which obviously is what Raphael Bob Waksberg is pulling from for kind of the inspiration on how to make this episode, like, going to to older television, especially when television was kind of more like this, where it was more kind of like televised plays, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
like,
I mean,
a wonderful era as someone who leans towards when film and TV feel more like a play.
I mean, it's interesting because this is, I mean, I'm gonna do this, but there a similar time to this, I believe. I mean, a couple of years beforehand is Louis C.K.'s Horace and Pete, which was also that, but also does an episode similar to this where it is just. And then, like, removing the Louis C.K. of it all out from this, like, there's a terrific, God, where's the, sorry, 1 second. There's a terrific episode of that where Laurie Metcalf just does, like, a monologue for the entire episode, and it's kind of like a 40-minute episode, and it's very similar to this in terms of, like, what it's doing, and kind of, like, again, these... this thing that you kind of feel has been lost in the new way that we make television, where they're not pulling from what worked in old eras of television and making it new. They're, again, we're getting this. It's a season of a television. It's a novel. It's a, notice I don't call them episodes. I call them chapters. kind of bullshit thing. And it's like, no, like, make an episode ass episode like this, where, like, this is so easily definable. Like, there is nothing else like this on the show, and it's indebted to the history and the form of the medium to make it work.
Yeah. And, like, you mentioned the Becca thing. The Becca thing is, like, a surprisingly, like, poignant little, like, it's the perfect kind of, like he feels as a comedian, he needs to put on a bit of a show, like a eulogy. It's like a stand-up special for him, and he, like, I have to bring the goods. It is on me to, like, do a really good, smart, clever, funny eulogy. And for him to say that, like, he was really sad when Becca got cancelled because he thought it could get better, and then, like, he will never see if it does, you know, it would never get good. And comparing that to his relationship with his mother, where, like, it was so awful, but some part of him held up hope that one day they would have a good relationship, and now she's gone before that's going to happen, kind of thing. And yeah, it's like, you know, that feels like such a dumb little joke, like, to dunk on Becca, which, like, no one fucking remembers, and then to like loop it back around to, like, being like, yeah, no, that is actually quite a good, like, analogy for losing someone. Like,
not to say that no one remembers it, but Blank Check have done multiple episodes this year where they've done long tangents on Becca.
Okay.
People have been complaining in the comments every single time it happens. Like, there was like a big episode earlier this year where there's like a full on like half the episode is Becca talk.
Nice. I like the details we get about his dad dying, because, like, we knew his dad died, but we didn't know how, and, like, you know, the circumstances around it, that like he finally released his terrible book and he said, what was it, like, if anyone in the world wanted to like talk shit about his book, he challenged them to a duel and he put them up in a hotel. And like, we hear that his dad died in a duel, and then it turns out he tripped and hit his head on a rock while doing the standing 10 count.
Because he turned around to ask whether or not the guy who was actually dueling him read the book and like what he actually thought about it, because he realized this, like, it's just some guy who wanted to do a duel in reality, not someone who actually read his book. And BoJack's dad dying in the duel actually leads us on really nicely into Mr. Peanut Butter's booze.
Yeah. Yeah. Because... Oh, I do like that we learned that BoJack never actually read his dad's book, because why would he give him that? But yes, it does. Yeah, like, I stand by it. Like, you know, I like what I like, and I just think it's more interesting to talk about in depth than, like, the larger BoJack story. But yeah, like, to flash between 1993, 2004, 2009, and the present, these different eras of this Halloween party that Mr. Peanut Butter like forces BoJack to throw, because he got caught in a lie where he was like, oh, I can't come to your Halloween party because I'm hosting my own, to get out of hanging out with him. And then he's like, okay, I just brought my party to you. And then he just keeps doing this. He turns up for the party of people. And it sets up wonderful like history of the characters. Like we finally learn how Todd wandered into BoJack's home and became his roommate. We see Todd as a child. We see Mr. Peanut Butter with each of his ex-wives, with Katrina and Jessica Biel and Diane, and now he's there with Pickles. They pay off that Princess Carolyn always dresses as Amelia Earhart, because we saw that episode that she would watch that Amelia Earhart tape over and over and over again.
We get the fantastic running joke of like them taping over the same box that's got screeners from each year, with like how screeners evolve over time. So it starts with like 1993 VHSs and evolves into like what they're giving out in the 2018 party. It's not DVD screeners, is it?
I think, like, they send like USB sticks out to people. You know, like, it's like fun because it seems like it's just a gimmick episode, but I like that it world builds and it like provides this rich history for everyone. And like, I think seeing, because like they've made Katrina and Jessica Biel out to be like pretty horrible people, kind of thing. And Diane, like, you know, we like Diane, but like, you know, she's grouchy or whatever. And to see them all, and like Diane is like seeing her when she's like freshly with Mr. Peanut Butter, kind of thing. Seeing them all young and genuinely happy with life in their eyes, kind of thing. And seeing the Mr. Peanut Butter effect on each one of them. It's like surprisingly good. Like Katrina, like, doesn't want to be left alone at the party. And this is the other thing, like, he doesn't listen and he loves parties, so he assumes other people do, and he just leaves them at these parties and fails to, like, look out for them. And, you know, the ridiculous Jessica Biel thing where she's traumatized by the mummy, so she doesn't want to see any mummies. And then it turns out the reason is she auditioned for a part in The Mummy and she didn't get it. And he's like, oh, is that it? And then you learn she wanted to play the mummy. In The Mummy. And then BoJack stumbles up to her as a mummy, because Princess Carolyn made him a costume out of thin air.
And again, fantastic. Like, they set it in 2004 as well, which is like relatively early on in her career. Like, she's done Seventh Heaven at this point, but they say like, that was like the biggest miss of my career in 2004 up at this point. In my upcoming movie, Blade Trinity.
I'll say my catchphrase, stop goofing around, Blade. and I like, so they do a sequence of cascading jokes where Mr. Peanut Butter just doesn't get the show of the time. So like, he doesn't get the X-Files, he wants to know about the A-Files, the B-Files, the C-Files. They do the Lost one in 2004. In 2009, he doesn't get Glee. He's like, where is the music coming from? I don't know if they have one for the present day, but like, yeah, just like these big like zeitgeisty shows, and Mr. Peanut Butter is just like, I don't understand, because he's a dumb person and he just doesn't understand things.
What do you think I mean, obviously, like, they get other little things. Where I think they finally pay off the fact that, like, earlier on in the show, Diane says that, like, I've met you twice before.
Yes.
To BoJack, and this is the second of their first two meetings, because we'd seen the other one in the 2004 flashback, or the 2007 flashback, didn't we?
I don't know. I thought this was the first time she met him at the party.
Maybe it's the first time, but I remember, like, she said that, like, I've met you twice before, and this is like.
I thought it was I met you once before.
Oh, was it met you once before?
And he didn't remember. Oh, no, yeah, like somebody like puked a load of cotton candy or something.
Yes.
Yeah. But then isn't that also the Todd episode? Maybe it's actually the same party and we're just seeing it from two. I don't know. But yeah, like she's excited. She's like, oh my God, BoJack Horseman. And then like this is when he's learning that his dad died.
In a duel?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, again, to pay off little references to episodes from the same season, like that is really good. And like, you can understand him being shitty to her in that moment, but like the way they play it is really good, where he's like, sorry, I'm on the fucking phone. And she's like, oh my God, hi. And yeah, I it's just something about that for me, like seeing her like younger and more like vibey, you know, and like knowing
more
that she's
idealistic.
Yeah, and knowing that she reaches this place where she's like a sad 30-year-old and like 35
living
year old.
living in her depressing apartment, yeah, which and everyone takes the piss out of whenever they come around.
Sorry, I broke all of your furniture. Will $20 be enough to cover it? And then she's like, she says something like, it's okay, like she says like fuck off, but then she's like, yes. And then this is obviously also where Diane like confronts Mr. Peanut Butter with this idea that like he keeps dating young women, they grow up, and there's like a version of it where he almost gets like bored of them, or he when they're not happy and happy-go-lucky anymore, he is bored of them. And there's maybe a bit of that, but it's more that like they outgrow him, they become adults and he still wants to be young and just everything is happy all the time and I have no consequences in my life, and they all like just grow up a little bit. And yeah, it's like, again, they've got this gimmick episode that is very joke heavy, and then they hit you with that like kind of truth bomb about one of the characters. And
obviously the skill that BoJack has is to kind of like do this in so many episodes where like you think it's gonna be a joke heavy episode and then they'll pivot in like the last 5 minutes into something darker or something more profound in terms of like its statement about stuff.
What
do you think the external public's view of the relationship between Mr. Peanut Butter and BoJack is? Just in terms of like the fact that like they had these shows that were kind of like the same thing, mm-hmm. and then their careers keep on intertwining,
and like he ends up on Philbert, and then yeah, he keeps worming his way into his life. Yeah, I assume everyone thinks they're best friends.
Like, the first thing is like they have this 25-year party thing where like it's at BoJack's house, but it's very obviously organized by Mr. Peanut Butter. He's the first guest on Hollywood Stars and Celebrities. I think there's like another one where it happens and stuff like that, but I'm just like, are there people out there rooting and going like, wow, these guys are like friend goals, like 25 years in the industry.
Yeah, like when, you know, when fans assume that two celebrities are like super close and then you find out like, no, I like him, but like we're not like friends kind of thing.
But I can just imagine like the message boards around like Philbert and going like, I mean, well, obviously the person to cast for the partner is Mr. Peanut Butter. I don't know why they went through Vance Wagner for like.
Well, he wanted like a big buzzy name. And he wanted someone dangerous. He wanted, because it's like a bad boy character. Like such hot garbage that they need someone. And I do like Mr. Peanut Butter trying to prove he can be a bad boy, and he keeps like just being nice to everyone by accident. A bit I did really appreciate was Katrina gets radicalized by talking to Tim Allen for 5 minutes.
It's not 5 minutes. You left me alone for an hour and a half.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, Tim Allen at this point is more famous for his controversial right-wing views than Home Improvement et al. Katrina is, like... Katrina is so upbeat here, and every time we've met her since, she's, like, this really hard-edged political campaigner. And, like, you see that this comes from this. Really good.
Okay.
Any more? I did have one more, and I can't remember it now. Oh, I like they kind of get a more comedic version of the alright, alright, alright joke from Dazed and Confused out of Mr. Peanut Butter. But yeah, I just, you know, I'm a sucker for a gimmick episode, to be honest.
It's a good one.
And it's, I just think it's really cleverly written. But yeah, so BoJack's arc with the painkillers, like, this is like one of the worst things he's ever, maybe at the end when you sort of rank the worst things he ever did. He's also like in a situation that wasn't his fault this time. Like, he does get injured and gets hooked on painkillers. Like, you know, he maybe should be more self-aware that he has an addictive personality. He has a history with narcotics, and maybe he should be supervised with his painkillers more. And like, Gina is like, how many of those do you take? And he just brushes her off. But like, you know, he legitimately needs the painkillers at first, and then they have an effect on him. And he is clearly having a psychotic break, and like, you know, he needs to tell people things. And then obviously, you know, he does the super fucked up thing. But like, yeah, it's just this thing where we keep seeing, he does keep making these almost earnest attempts to have relationships and do good work and move forwards, and then just always comes crashing down. And like, Diane really takes offense to this idea that, like, he improvises something to say about Filbert, and he basically says that, like, yeah, this is a show about how we all do bad stuff and that's okay. And because she works on it, she's like, whoa, 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 now I don't want the work I've done to let, you know, we see this, like, men that like need to be in therapy who are just like, well, there's plenty of art about fucked up people and how that's like, I guess that's all right. I'll just be a tortured, fucked up person. Like, no. So that's all really interesting, I think. And I don't know if he even really feels that way as much as he's just like trying to think of something to say at the premiere. But she really is set off by that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like to see the pills throughout the season, and like the night with Hollyhock where they're like just trying to score drugs for a whole night, and you know, the big incident with Gina, and yeah, something is in it. You know, we talked about the paying off that joke that like the house looks like his house because it's designed after David Boreanaz's house, but like none of that is helping with his grip on reality, because we see that in Showstopper. There's a moment where he thinks he's on at home and he's on the set, and then the opposite where he thinks he's on set and he's at home, and he's wearing the costume a lot, and they see that quite early. He does a lot of like going straight from filming to something else, so he's like used to wearing the costume even though he's not filming. And yeah, it's powerful stuff, and like you kind of feel it coming earlier than it does. Like, I remember getting to Interior Sub and being like, oh, is he about to choke Gina? It's like, oh no, that's later, isn't it? But yeah, the way the show is set up, where it's like Filbert has this dark past, and you know, as you said, Diane writing his life into the show without having the full context. Yeah, it's all, like I say, it's a really good long-term story. There's some really excellent individual moments. I'm not discounting like him hallucinating the staircase and the musical number with Gina with all the lookalikes, including like they have like a prop version of the Sugarman house.
I think it's kind of it's the perfect season for where BoJack is right now, even if qualitatively it's not quite to the heights of like 4 in particular, which I think is kind of like the peak of the show in terms of like delving into to the stuff that came beforehand. But like, I think this 3-episode arc at the end of the season really well sets up kind of like what the last 16 episodes are.
Yeah.
And obviously this is not the last time we are going to visit this well. It's potentially not the last time we're going to discuss episodes like the Showstopper, but we'll see where we get to in kind of like season 6A and season 6B.
Yeah. And you know, obviously it's like him finally recognizing he needs to go to rehab is like some of his biggest growth, but there's still so many things that haven't come out. And like, when I think him grappling with, they're going to give this TV interview and he wants to tell the truth, and Gina is like, no, I fucking hate you. And she gets our F-bomb for the season. What the fuck, when he chokes her. She's like, I fucking hate you, and I never want to be near you outside of work again. However, I will not be your victim for the rest of my career. And he wants to do the right thing here, but then, like, you do right by the victim. Like, you know, you take her lead on what is to happen. And then he wants Diane to write a takedown on him and tell all the shitty stuff he's done. And she's like, no. And we know there is more to come. Like, they still haven't dropped the reveal that he didn't call the ambulance for Sarah Lynn. It is still not public about what happened with Penny. And, like, we do get the confirmation here that he does say nothing happened, but he does keep saying yet. So it's like, this is one where you shouldn't have even been in that situation. It's not about what did or didn't happen. It's that you allowed that to happen. I think maybe that is more the thing with BoJack, is that, like, he doesn't have the self-awareness to recognize when he's in trouble and seek people's help and advice and to be like, right, this is a bad situation. I need to remove myself from it. Like, I can't be on a set that looks like my house, and I am taking too many painkillers, and I should talk to someone. Like, that is almost the thing, more than, hey, rewind time and don't go on a bender with a drug addict. Like, yeah, I think that, because it's like, you do reach a point where, like, BoJack has passed a point where it's like, this is not a good person and never will be. But it's like, but then what do you do with him? Like, do we want him to go to prison? Do we want him to die? Like, and that's the thing, is I think he just needs to gain that that perspective.
I think they do nail the ending, but that's for kind of like the next two episodes to kind of like discuss. Do you want to hear who was nominated instead of Will Arnett at the Emmys for Best Character Voiceover Performance in 2019?
I don't want to, but I think I should. So, because I assume it's going to make me angry.
In alphabetical order, Hank Azaria for The Simpsons. Alex Borstein for Family Guy. Eric Jacobson for Sesame Street.
Okay.
Seth MacFarlane for Family Guy, who wins.
Okay.
And Kevin Michael Richardson for F is for Family.
Oh, boy. Okay. Whatever.
I mean, it's basically just like, it's three legacy animated shows that are just like, yeah, we can just check this off, really. Yeah. And obviously, Eric Jacobson is also a kind of like a classic name, because he's been voicing like Bert Grover Oscar for like years and years
Yeah, I'm not mad at Sesame Street.
No, but that's the thing is, but like, I also don't think he's like a perennial favorite at these awards, whereas like Borstein and Seth MacFarlane have both won Emmys before, and Hank Azaria. Like, the winners of this category since 2014, Harry Shearer for The Simpsons, Hank Azaria for The Simpsons, Seth MacFarlane for Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane for Family Guy, Alex Borstein for Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane for Family Guy, and then finally, we're now in like a 2-year run of Maya Rudolph for Big Mouth, Chadwick Boseman for What If, in a posthumous Emmy performance, and then they haven't announced who will win for this year, because obviously the Emmys got delayed. But yeah, like, why do we need to give Seth MacFarlane an Emmy for Family Guy 2019?
They're giving Seth MacFarlane it for Range, and then they're giving it to Borstein because she's the better actor of the two of them. Like, like, they're going like, oh my god, he's Peter and the dog and the baby.
And Quagmire.
And various others. Right, before we get out of here, as I mentioned, there are a couple of shorter ones, but there are two big tongue twisters. Do you want to do the really, really long one, or the quite long one?
Give me the harder one.
Okay, if you have your phone to hand.
I have my phone to hand.
Here it comes. And then I will do the slightly less insane one, but yeah. Good fucking luck.
Okay, this isn't the one that I thought was going to be the hard one, but it is. So a brief recapitulation. This is not a room for repudiation or condemnation over string cheese appropriation accusations. Mediation is an invitation for open conversation, frustration, de-escalation, and exchange of information, which in summation removes any justification for litigation involving this corporation.
Well done. Yeah, good job. I agree, the hardest parts are saying recapitulation and repudiation in everyday conversation. Like, those are just not words that the average person says a lot. The other one I wrote down was, I deserve to be adored by a man, yet here my dreams lie dormant. I don't mean to get mordantly morbid, but I do get all adorably adorned to get bored manning doors no more.
That was the one that I tried to find.
Yeah.
Again, Peter Butter's Boots, like, there was no quotes of this episode, but I'm like... I think that because like there's longer words in the one that I read, but there's so many like there's so many closer hard syllables.
Yeah, I didn't do that one very well, but like yeah, no, good job with that one because it's fucking insane. Right, that is season 5. It's another long one, but it was a big one. I assume our next two will be smaller because 8 episodes a piece. As I said, we will be doing them as they released them. So they released season 6 in 2 parts. We will go up to episode 8 of season 6, which is a quick one while he's away. So. Episodes 1 through 8 next time, and then we will finish the season in episode 7. But that is for the next couple of times for this time. It's been fun to talk about. I've been Matt, he's been Ben. Ben, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, suck a dick, dumb shits.
Bye.